It's Sunday, March 5th, 2001. It's about 12:57 a.m. And this is probably the last tape that I'm going to be making for a while. If, in fact, I can get this one done. Earlier today, I spent all afternoon on a two-tape reading of a story, and the machine ate the second tape of that, so I'll be using the first tape for dubbing or something. That's the first tape that this machine has eaten since last year, when it was eating just about every other tape, or every third tape that I tried to make. At that point, I was going to quit, but I decided that I'd give it another try because there was a couple of stories by Kim Newman that I particularly wanted to get on tape if I could. And so I gave it another try, and I've gotten some pretty good stuff down this time around, but enough is enough. At this point, I'm going to use the remaining tapes, the blanks that I have, to consolidate my collection by dubbing the tapes that I expect to be listening to the most, so that if they get eaten, I'll still have master copies of them. And this one, if it gets done, I will most definitely be dubbing, because it will be a master copy, and the only copy, since I'm not performing this from a script or anything, I'm simply talking. As a convention, this tape is being made by Goblin Hood, even though it's my, that is Biotti's, 3D collection that Goblin Hood will be talking about here. But arguably, Goblin Hood collects this stuff just as much as Biotti does, and so that's reasonable enough. I just prefer it for Goblin Hood to be the one making these tapes, even if it is actually Biotti rambling on Ex Cathedra and without the benefit of script. I forget what that's called. Anyway, extemporary, something like that. In any case, the reason for this tape is that I'm hoping to get back to work painting soon. Whether I paint on the triptych or whether I continue with a certain other area that my work has gone into, these tapes were originally being made to listen to while I worked on the triptych. This particular tape would be even more appropriate to listen to while I work on my other little sideline now. But either way, if I can get this tape made, it'll probably be the last one I try to do. I just don't feel like struggling with it, you know, like not knowing whether the thing is going to be eating my tapes or not. It's an old machine. If I can get this one last one made, I'll be happy. This one is particularly important to me because I noticed last year when I was painting on the triptych and listening to the tapes, that the things I was most likely to listen to were things that, well, for one thing, that had to do with sexual matters, since the triptych has a lot to do with that, and so it helps me to listen to that kind of stuff, stories like that, and an essay that I myself wrote while I'm working on the triptych. But I noticed that the other thing I listened to the most was a copy of Ubik that I had made, and that the reason I wound up listening to it as many times as I did was that there's a scene in about the middle of the book in which the characters in the futuristic world happen to be watching a 3D television set. And that scene reminded me of what I would be doing with my time if I weren't painting, which is watching 3D television myself as part of my collection of 3D material. As a matter of fact, the two things that I wound up taping sort of desperately the last time around both had that sort of a background. One was the story We Also Walk Dogs by Robert Heinlein, and the other, even more importantly, was the novel Stranger in a Strange Land. And these stories were taped specifically because, in the first case, what he called stereo vision was just about everywhere, even on the telephone. You know, an intercom system would show like a 3D image. In the second case, stereo television was a major part of the background of the novel. I have always associated this somehow with futurity. It was a part of the future that for some reason I particularly responded to the notion of 3D television. Well, it never came about in any big way, but I've collected by now a lot more of it than I ever expected to have my hands on. And I'll probably be getting to that on the second side of this tape, which will focus itself primarily upon my favorite hour of 3D TV, the film from the 50s, Catwoman of the Moon. Before I go on about my collection in general, I would like to take this opportunity to mention that I could not have collected most of the best of this stuff without the help of my, partner in these things, Julia Brubaker, my other self is how I look at her. The person that I'm living with, who has been more than helpful to me in these matters, who has indulged this and encouraged this activity on my part and treated it as if it were a worthwhile, let alone harmless, little diversion. Even now, I can't explain why I'm so fascinated with 3D anything, but lately I've been speculating, and the most the best speculation that I've come up with is this: my own eyesight is very faulty in the sense that my eyes aren't perfectly coordinated, so I don't get the perfect kind of like fusion of two images that most people do. Instead, I have double images, you know, double vision. Particularly when I'm tired, I'll see two images moving apart from each other, one of which is perhaps more solid than the other. And my eyesight has been this way since I was a kid. And I speculate that it is some subconscious fear on my part of winding up monocular with one eye, you know, if my eyesight ever gets that bad, that causes me to so relish the instances where I can see three dimensions clearly, particularly the illusion of three dimensions, which we call 3D, which I call it anyway. To dispose of it early on in this, I'm going to talk about the things in my collection which I cannot fully appreciate. First of all, I have a few examples of autostereograms in their most primitive sense, which are two photographs, slightly different, set side by side. You stare at them until they fuse into one three-dimensional image. I've never been able to make that work. But ironically, at this point, with, you know, the right combination of glasses, I can make almost any photograph look three-dimensional, however distorted it also looks. Another example of 3D that I haven't been able to see more than once or twice on its own is the ViewMaster type, which uses the same principle of two slides that are slightly different, with one of their viewers, the slides converge into a three-dimensional image. I've seen this once or twice, but before very long, my eyes begin to separate the images into two images drifting apart, which is the same with binoculars and almost anything like that. On the other hand, I've managed to come up with ways of dealing with this too. Recently, I bought a projector that projects the ViewMaster images on the wall or wherever you want to project them. And with the right combination of glasses, in both of these cases, I'm talking about wearing two pairs of chroma-depth glasses, I can see a distorted but three-dimensional image out of these. A third example of what doesn't work too well for me so far is another kind of autostereogram called random dot stereograms, also known as magic eye pictures. But recently I've been collecting these, and Julia recently gave me two volumes of books containing these images. My hope is that when I get new glasses, because the prescription that I've been using is now over 10 years old, when I get new prescription glasses, they will control my eyesight to such an extent that I'll be able to see all of these things if I work at it a little bit. I don't know if that'll come true or not. But I do know this. My serious collecting of 3D began in the 60s. But I didn't begin to take it seriously until the mid-1990s, after I had been wearing prescription glasses for 3 or 4 years. Before that, I'd never been able to get myself to wear the glasses. After that, I discovered virtually by chance one day that one of the things the glasses did was make it possible for me to see much more clearly the three-dimensional aspect in some of the comic books and things that I had already long since collected. So I'm hoping for yet another renaissance when I get my prescription updated. Meanwhile, it's as good a place as any to start. The earliest thing in my collection, as far as I know, is another kind of autostereogram. It was a cover to a Rolling Stone album from the late 1960s. The album was their Satanic Majesty's Request. And I collected this plastic, what is known as lenticular autostereogram image, mostly because it was psychedelic, not because so much it was in 3D, but it is a very good 3D image. Since then, I've collected other albums with various kinds of 3D covers, including one lenticular CD cover with Bowie on it. His, well, I forget the name of Hours, the Hours CD. And interestingly, neither of those two that I've mentioned still have those covers. Those are definitely collector's items. But I bought the Bowie CD when it first came out, and the 3D, you know, I just wanted the CD because I'm a big fan. The 3D lenticular cover was a bonus. But recently in a music store, I noticed that for the most part that no longer has the lenticular cover. So those really do become collector's items very quickly. In terms of lenticular material, there was a period when I was extremely enthusiastic about it. This was just last year. I even sent away for samples to a company that makes lenticular images as a promotional thing for businesses and stuff. I began collecting videos simply because their boxes had lenticular images on them. And I've collected some pretty good stuff that way. I also began collecting and writing in notebooks that had lenticular covers. So far I've written two documents in notebooks of that sort. One is, the first was called Prisoner of the Third Dimension, and it's sort of a journal about my collecting and about my collection. The sequel to it was The Last Days of JB2K, which I will be explaining later. Since those have been filled up, I've been keeping a loose-leaf journal in the first of two lenticular-covered file folders, I guess, with pockets inside. And until I can find another journal to write in, that'll be what I'm doing. This is a good time to talking about my collection as a whole in the past tense, because just a day or two ago, Julia and I went on a mad dash all over Mansfield to every place we've gone and found anything, looking for, you know, new material. And the best I could come up with was one more set of Viewmaster reels, this one about dinosaurs. But what that means is that at this point, until something new comes along, and preferably something that I haven't already got good examples of, I'm pretty well done collecting. This tape here, if I can finish it, would be the last piece in my collection, and probably the one that I spend the most time dealing with. But I had a very interesting experience during that little binge of searching for things. The reason that that search came about was that last month I had an unprecedented experience at a music store which sells videos at the local mall. We were looking at Julia's suggestion. She was looking for music and I was just looking at their videos in general. We have had, you know, we have been to video stores and asked again and again about 3D videos, and we have almost invariably been told that they don't even exist. I know that's not true because I've collected so many of them. But the only place short of mail order, and even worse yet, computer website orders, that I've been able to see them is, ironically, they have all three versions, all three volumes of a Pulfrick system series of roller coaster videos at the local library, which to me is simply amazing. That's until now, that was the only place I'd ever seen 3D videos outside of like websites and stuff. Pulfric, by the way, is a system wherein one lens of the glasses is dark, the other is clear. It's based on the darkened eye seeing slower than the other eye, and somehow this causing the mind to create a three-dimensional view of some sort. And while I'm going about it, just as lenticular is the kind of like plastic, striated plastic, doubly convex images that you don't need any glasses to see. Chroma depth is a system whereby the glasses, which are like holographic film, cause warm colors such as red to come into the foreground and cool colors such as blue to go into the background when you're wearing these glasses. And for me, it works better if I have two pairs on. The most common system for any 3D material where glasses are used has always been the anaglyph system, in which one or the other eye is red and the other eye is blue. You know, like when the red lens is over the dominant or right eye, I call it the red system. When it's over the blue, when the blue lens is over the dominant eye, or in my case, the right eye, I call it the blue system. Usually the material itself will tell you which side to be looking through. Those are the main systems in terms of 3D material which requires glasses. Anyway, last month, while we were at that video store, I happened across the only 3D video I have ever seen for sale at a store, which was a limited edition of a Kiss video. I had known that Kiss used 3D video in their performances, and that's why I happened to look, because this place is very, very well represented in terms of music videos, since it's a music store. And sure enough, Kiss did have a 3D video out of their song Psycho Circus. Apparently there's four different versions of that particular video. I don't know if any more than one of them is in 3D. The video that I bought has the 3D version plus what is apparently a flat version, or possibly one half of the polarized version that they must have shown at their concerts. The reason I know this is because I sent away for some samples from a company that makes 3D glasses, and among those samples that I received were some polarized 3D glasses used at a Kiss concert, plainly marked by Kiss, you know, in Psycho Circus. Well, the glasses that came with the video were not polarized, they were chroma depth glasses. So apparently somebody had gone over the video and colorized it and added some scenes that were specifically created for the chroma depth system. By chance, I happened to see yet another version of the same video on cable television one night. So my belief is that they used this video in their concerts using two projectors. This is the way most of the 50s movies were shown as well. Computer-generated cartoons, including a 3D treatment of a Simpsons cartoon. This was just unbelievable. The glasses were probably polarized. You know, from what I remember, the spiel they gave, I believe the glasses were filled with liquid crystal or something. But here, there were like gigantic images seeming to float over the, you know, audience in front of me. Images seeming to hang right next to either side of my head. Images that seemed to be directly in front of me and seemed to have no relation to the screen that they were actually on. I took the glasses off briefly one time during a fairly static scene, and there seemed to be, all I can say is that none of the video material I've seen recreated that effect. And, well, with IMAX, you have like a gigantic screen, you know, 5 stories tall or something, and all this technology, a lot of what was done, I believe, was created by the sound system. There were like headphones built into the goggles that I wore, and it was just a really unique experience. I compare the other 3D material that I've got to it, but what I can say is that some of the video material I've got is virtually state-of-the-art in one system or another, and so I know what it's supposed to look like. I can also compare the IMAX thing, the video material, and the bubble in its original form to a version of Creature from the Black Lagoon that I saw a few years back. I don't know, I guess it was 1996. This movie and its companion piece, It Came from Outer Space, these have been making the rounds evidently since the late 70s in an anaglyphic version, which I guess they took the original polarized movie, transferred it to a one-strip anaglyph thing so that it could be shown before it started touring. I've never seen either of those on video. But evidently, during the late 80s, or no, the early 80s, or probably this technology became available, television as we know it now became possible in the late 70s or early 80s by means of the anaglyph one strip system, which actually dates back to the 1920s. During which time it was called plastigrams. And also, I would imagine that the Pulfrex system for video was being developed at that time. That, based on what I've seen, has been one of the most common uses of 3D on television. It was used for the Fox presentation of Married with Children during the 90s. It was used for the Third Rock presentation, and it was used for a presentation of a video about sharks that was done on the Discovery Channel. Of those three, I happen to have a copy of the Third Rock video, which I collected just about a year ago right now. At the time, however, and this was a copy of the TV show that had been made as it was broadcast by a friend of mine because he was afraid I wouldn't get to watch it at the time. And I remembered I did get to watch it, but none of us knew what specific glasses were supposed to be used. They were the Pulfrex glasses, but it was one of those things where you go to a store, you know, that sells food, like a Pizza Hut or something, and get the glasses. Well, we didn't do that, my friends and I. So when we watched this at the home of a friend of mine, David, we simply used anaglyphic glasses, because that's what we had. I happened to have some Fox glasses with me, but I didn't know to use them. Well, later, the copy of this that had been made for me, my friend David had it, and he gave it to me a year ago. But even then, for at least a couple of months, I was watching it with the red system of anaglyphic glasses. And it seemed okay. I mean, you know, like, all of these systems are different. And in fact, the glasses can all be used in different ways if you ignore what they're supposed to be used. Like, for instance, again, with that video and with others, I get a better effect if I wear two pairs of pulpit glasses. And unless I'm in a dark room, which is going to create a lot of reflections, the same goes for the anaglyph and the chroma depth effect. For me, it just works better when they're doubled up. But again, all three systems are different. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. An obvious weakness of chroma depth is that the colors are very limited. If you want them to be effective, you have to, you know, work from red to blue going into the background. The weakness of anaglyph is that whether you're using the red or blue system, it seems to color the whatever you're watching. And pulpit gives the best natural color, but it tends to give less extreme depth and convexity, you know, the sense of things popping out toward you. Though they can do some fairly decent things with it. None of these, like I say, are as effective as something like IMAX, but then IMAX has got to be one of the most elaborate systems ever created, and will probably remain the best system until they perfect some sort of hologram that you can sit and watch in your own home. Anyway, so that was my supreme experience last month, walking into the video store and actually finding, against all the conventional wisdom, an actual 3D video for sale. And it turned out to be in the chroma depth system. And then, as if to put icing on the cake, we stopped at a comic book store on the way home, the one time we've ever gone to this local comic book store. And I happened to look through their back issues and found a three-part consecutive story of something called Solar the Destroyer, which is the sequel to the only chroma depth comic that I had had up until then. Now, I call that Chroma Depth Day. It's a Sunday. Why would that be important? Well, it's important for the following reason. When we were binging around this past Saturday, looking for something for me to collect, you know, I wanted to make sure there were no more videos. We went out there, there were no more videos. They still had a couple copies of the Kiss thing. We went to the most likely place to find notebooks with particular covers. There was nothing like that. And in short, we just shopped around, and just by chance, we decided to go to this place next door to the Office Max where we'd been looking for those notebooks. And it was a home art store, I guess. Sold home decorating stuff plus art supplies. While I was browsing around in there, I found something that a couple of years back, maybe, would have blown my mind. You know, something that at one point or another I would have had to have. it was a kit for making your own 3D pictures. But the reason I walked away from it, I showed it to Julia and walked away laughing, is that I already have such a kit. I have already learned to do that. It was based on the ChromaDepth system, and I learned to do that a year ago, last month, in February of 2001. February of 2000, I learned to paint using the ChromaDepth system from reading these Valiant Vision, this Valiant Vision comic, plus a little comic that had come along with the glasses when I'd acquired those back in the mid-90s. It's the only 3D system that's really accessible to somebody who doesn't have a lot of elaborate equipment, because it's simply based upon color and the use of color, and can be enhanced, of course, by a deeper knowledge of perspective. I have been attempting to learn the perspective aspect of it, but even without that, I can make images seem to float above the page by using the color properly. I've done quite a few paintings since last year, and am continuing to study this, which is one of the reasons why this particular tape is so important to me. It would be perfect to listen to while I paint 3D ChromaDepth paintings. I call it color space. Since I've mentioned comic books, I have quite a collection at this point. I have, you know, 4 consecutive comic books in ChromaDepth, or Valiant Vision as they call themselves. Plus I've collected, you know, at least 4 pairs of the glasses, and I know where to get more. I will be at some point ordering a number of these in bulk, just in case I decide to exhibit my paintings. I've been told by Julia that doubling the glasses does increase the depth, but then David, whose eyesight is probably better than either of ours since he doesn't wear glasses, he says that the additional pair of glasses tends to flatten the effect. So I don't know. I'll have to wait and see how it looks when my eyesight is better perfected. In addition to the ChromaDepth, I have quite a good collection of anaglyphic comic books, probably the gems of, well, it's hard to say what's the best. I've got a lot of things I was really happy to collect. These include a book of photographs with basically figure studies, and I have several magazines. Last year was a good year for it. There was like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition had a 3D section, and then during the summer or early spring or late spring there was a guitar music magazine that had a whole section of 3D photographs. These things always tend to come with their own glasses. And unless I specify otherwise, it's always some form of anaglyphic system, 3D. There was also, toward the end of the year, a new issue of Astronomy Magazine had some extremely beautiful space photography done in 3D. This was the second time they'd done it. I have both versions, both volumes of that. Plus, I have some underwater 3D photography done in National Geographic, and there are other magazines and books. I have 4 different sets of pictures of Mars that there was like a brief upswing in 3D prestige late during the last century when the Mars Pathfinder was able to send back 3D images from Mars. But in fact, 3D has been used. 3D photography was used to help win the Second World War, so it's been used scientifically for a long time. It was used in connection with aerial photographs of the V1 or V2 rockets, surveillance pictures. I have other books, like I said, magazines, comic books. So I have quite a bit of stuff. I'm not going to talk too much about that aspect of my collection. I have a very good collection of holograms. Most of the best of them were given to me by Julia. She gave me a Star Trek hologram of the Enterprise, which is possibly the most sophisticated one that I've got. She gave that to me for Christmas, and then last Valentine's Day, she gave me a book of basically a child's book of astronomy involving the constellations, but it happens to have very sophisticated holograms of constellation images. I also have a really good hologram on the cover of a Prince CD. Some of the more interesting items that I've got. One of the more interesting items that I've got is a holographic stamp that I collected at the time the post office was issuing these. It's a little space station with astronauts and spaceships around it. And it's a hologram. It's the kind of like mirror type Mylar hologram. Most of these are. One exception is the Star Trek hologram, which simply looks like a flat black surface until you put it in the correct lighting. In addition to these kinds of things, I have several what can only be described as toys, apart from Viewmaster material. I have 2 different VR systems, as they call themselves, one of which actually seems like VR equipment. There's like a heavy headset that you wear with headphones and everything, and it amounts to a kind of a video game of shooting aliens, for which you use a remote wireless zap gun, ray gun type thing. I can't get this to work very well, but it is a form of 3D. Different aspects of it light up when different things get done. As a companion piece to that, VR 3D Android attack game, I have another similar game, this time in the form of an extremely baroque looking pair of like goggles you hold in your hand, and there's a joystick attached to it. This has better imagery, more colorful this time. It amounts to like zapping spaceships with your spaceship kind of thing. The two of them together are extremely satisfying, even though they're both difficult to use because they're uncomfortable. These are all battery operated. I also have a space projection game, which is like a little screen with a lever that controls the speed and a little steering wheel that controls moving it from side to side. And it has spaceships coming at you and meteors and stuff. It's 3D in the sense that, you know, well, it's not flat, but it's not the illusion of 3D that I think of as 3D. It is nice. It's more the kind of 3D that they call it in a lot of computer games, where it's simply drawn to look 3D and not creating any illusory space. Again, this thing is a mere toy, but I enjoy. Even more impressive to me is something a lot simpler than that, called a lumogram, that I collected earlier this year. This is simply an image, a bearded man. It looks as if it could be a religious icon. What's interesting about it is that it is carved in reverse. In other words, it's like looking into the inside of a mask of this face. But when you turn it on, there's a little light situated in front of it, lights it up, and it looks as if there's a three-dimensional image of this face hanging there. It's based upon an optical principle that is very simple. If you look into the inside of a mask like that, under the correct circumstances, it will seem to be convex instead of concave, because the eye simply translates it that way. So this lumogram is sort of like a little mascot image that I turn on. I have it on right now, looking at it. It's something I really like because it's based on a very simple optical principle that creates a spectacular form of 3D that is almost completely illusory. It's like a sculpture made of light. Anyway, these are more or less the static items. And there's probably others. I have a few little items that amount to false 3D, like I have a pop-up image, you know, like that's basically kind of origami or something, paper sculpture. I don't regard that as 3D any more than I regard three-dimensional models and things as 3D. But I'm not going to go into the differences here. So far, I'm on the second side of the tape now. With any luck, I'll be able to get through this, and this tape will be duped, because I know I'll be listening to it a lot while I work, since it speaks the most directly to that which I care about the most. It's time to talk about Catwoman of the Moon. This first came to my attention in the series of various reviews, since I've always been a sort of a fanatical buff in reading about movies and so forth. Most of the reviews aren't very good. I'm I'm going to read the one review that is fairly positive from a book entitled, just a minute here, The Film Encyclopedia of Science Fiction by Phil Hardy. William Morrow and Company, Inc., New York, copyright 1984, with contributions by Dennis Gifford, Anthony Master, Paul Taylor, Paul Willeman. And here's the entry for Catwoman, 1953. Catwoman of the Moon, a.k.a. Rocket to the Moon, Aster, 2M Productions, black and white, 64 minutes. Hilton's direction and Hamilton's screenplay are never dull, but as a combination they are very bad. A crew from an American air base land on the moon, steered to a certain spot by Windsor, who is telepathically dominated by the leader of the Catwomen, Brewster, who inhabit caves between the dark and light sides of the moon. Tufts leads the expedition, arriving in a spaceship whose control room belonged to a previous submarine film. You can still see the periscope. Having killed a couple of giant horned spiders, Tufts and crew arrive at a Greek-looking moon city, reportedly left over from a Marco Polo film, where they confront the Catwomen, who are dressed in black leotards and don't look like cats at all. They are anxious to hitch a lift to Earth and use their telepathy to try to dominate the crew, but are weakened by wrangling amongst themselves. Hurriedly, the crew return to their submarine control room and take off back to Earth. The film was made in 3D, which made the antics, some of which were performed in front of crumpled backdrops, one of them showing Monument Valley, even more hilarious. Astor remade the film in 1958 as Missile to the Moon, directed by Arthur Hilton, co-produced and written by Jack Rabin, co-producer Al Simbulis, script Roy Hamilton. Oh, the special effects were by Jack Rabin. And then there's a credit for William F. Whitley, whatever he did. It stars Sonny Tufts, Mary Windsor, Victor Jory, Susan Morrow, Douglas Fowley, and Carol Brewster. Now, this particular review doesn't happen to mention it, but one of the best qualities of the film is a screenplay by Elmer Bernstein, who later won an Academy Award for his soundtracks, and it has an extremely 50s type space quality. It's not the Star Trek type movie music. It's like, oh, sort of eerie and mysterious music as they land on the moon. And so forth. It fluctuates between dramatic, melodramatic music and something that sounds like it's done partly with theremins or maybe some other odd instrument. Beautiful music, really. It's one of my favorite aspects of the movie. It sounds so much like a 50s type movie. I need to correct a couple of things from that review because I've studied this film again and again. It's near as I can tell, when he said the control room was from a submarine movie, that was incorrect. I believe what he's talking about is the so-called Atom Chamber, or this place where a guy goes to fix something concerning the atomic reactor. Here you can see the resemblance to a submarine. He comes down a ladder into a small chamber where there is a thing hanging in the middle that looks like a periscope. And he, you know, sprays fire extinguish stuff around while there's like, you know, smoke and fog from a machine, obviously, you know, coming out towards you from the image. Very hilariously, as he's climbing the ladder back, his head hits the top of the set and makes the entire ceiling shake. This is Kip, the nominal hero of the film, played by Victor Jory. He's extremely clumsy throughout. When he jumps off of his flight couch at the beginning of the movie, he knocks a control panel to the side. You know, he constantly makes the film look even cheaper than it probably was. But in terms of just cheapness and cruddiness, there's a scene where one of the Catwomen calls the character she's with by the wrong name, and they simply don't fix it. She's not even on screen. They can dub over it, but they don't. His name is Walt, and she accidentally calls him Doug. That's how bad the movie can be. The giant spiders, by the way, according to an article in Fangoria, were done with large tarantula puppets that were dangled from the top of the set, and you can actually see the strings at certain moments. Okay, those are the bad things about the movie. Particularly bad is most of the footage of the rocket ship in space, which looks like a toy rocket ship flying across a blank black background, even though there's like, you know, cluttered star fields on their view screen. All right. Those are the bad aspects. When I first heard of this movie, it had gotten such a bad reputation. You know, when I first heard that it was one of the three movies on video in 3D, it was the one that sounded the least interesting. One of those, The Mask, which has 3D scenes in it, I'd actually just seen. And the other one was Robot Monster, which is now no longer available. Since then, I've collected both Catwomen and The Mask, plus a Western entitled Coming At You, which, partly for historical purposes, because it was made during the brief 3D boom of the 1980s, and because during the 50s, the heyday of 3D films, they made more Westerns than they did anything else, you know. I've also collected The Bubble, which was a 3D movie made in the 60s. Like The Mask, The Mask was made earlier, 1961. The Bubble was made in 1966, but not released until 1976. I saw it in late 76, I guess, at a theater. I also have a 10-minute film of atomic testing that was from the director's cut of a movie called Trinity and Beyond. So this is state-of-the-art 3D television, except that a lot of it was cobbled together with footage that was probably taken from, you know, from 1951, the year I was born, onward. although some of it may have even been taken during the war, since some of it looks as if it's from a blasted Trinity. So 1945 up until whenever the video was released, probably in the 1990s. And it's like got connective footage that was probably taken more recently. And there's the Third Rock thing and some pulbrick roller coaster and other travelogue type video, one video about Alaska. There's also some, well, there's the Kiss video, and I've got some other stuff. The Kiss video and the Third Rock video are the only two other things that have any star scenes in them. This was always my idea of good 3D, is that it should have space scenes, because that's the deepest. Now, having seen Creature from the Black Lagoon, and also having had a chance to see some good underwater animation in the IMAX thing, I can say that underwater footage in 3D is extremely good, particularly in terms of the coming at you kind of imagery. But it just has so many levels, fish swimming in front of other fish. In my own collection, all I have is pulbrick material there, but I have some underwater animation in the Third Rock footage, plus I have some actual underwater photography in the Alaska and roller coaster material. But unfortunately, the pulbrick system isn't as effective as the other two. But the Kiss video has some really good outer space animation, although it's brief. There's a little bit of it, though brief and distorted, in the first segment of the Third Rock 3D material. But the best outer space footage I've got is the anaglyphic variety in Catwomen. Well, I don't know if it's the best. I mean, the Kiss stuff might be the best, but I'd say the Catwomen stuff is my favorite. When I first saw those three movies being available, my thought was that Catwomen was the least of them. Later, and I was bemoaning that they didn't have the Creature from the Black Lagoon, It Came from Outer Space, because those are supposed to be good movies, whereas Catwomen was never more than a piece of junk. Okay, but none of that matters to me. What I wanted was a space opera in 3D that I could watch on television. As it turns out, Catwomen was the only one made during the 50s. As far as I know, it was the only space opera where people actually went into outer space made during the 50s, and it was only one of a handful of such movies that were made at all. The others I've never seen, and they're certainly not available on video. So it's interesting that I now have a pretty good collection of 3D space movies, because I've got it in three different systems. But the Catwomen is my favorite. What I can say about Catwomen is that, given the state of the art during a time when even Sputnik was sometime in the future, their moon landing was probably as scientific looking and realistic as they could make it without knowing a lot more about it. It doesn't stand up very well to other important space movies of the time, such as Destination Moon. But of course, it didn't have anything like that kind of budget or prestige. And Destination Moon wasn't in 3D. Catwoman was, it seems to be, the only space opera made at the time in 3D. Even it came from outer space, as far as I know, was an almost completely earthbound story. So was Robot Monster, the other space involved 50s movie. So I can compare Catwoman to the theatrical presentation of the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and say that as movies, as stories, they're very similar. They have the 50s motif of two men fighting over the same women, the same woman. They have the stereotyped sort of characters. But there's one major difference. Catwoman consists almost entirely of fake sets. In fact, as far as I know, the sets are all fake. There are the fake spaceship interiors. There are the fake moonscapes. There are the fake cavescapes when they leave the surface and take their spacesuits off and give up on being scientific. There are the fake sets of the interior, whether they're from a Marco Polo movie or not. You know, the Greek-type cityscape thing going on. It's all fake. Whereas the Creature from the Black Lagoon is a combination of natural-looking location shots and fake interiors and stuff. Having seen them both, I can tell you that Catwoman is a better looking movie. You know, it doesn't quite have the beauty of the Creature from the Black Lagoon during the few underwater sequences that are so spectacular in 3D and that are strikingly beautiful. But in the Creature from a Black Lagoon, when they go from a natural location shot to a fake interior, it's visible. It shows. The fakeness of it sticks out like a sore thumb. In Catwoman of the Moon, it's never not fake. You begin to get accustomed to the cheapness and hokiness of it from the beginning. And that never lets you down. And after a while, it creates a sort of a fantasy aspect. Of the two movies, I like the looks of this one better. Because it always looks the same. You know, it's just people against fake backgrounds. Whereas the natural shots in Creature from the Black Lagoon, I remember several scenes where they're on board a boat. And there's something in the background. Doesn't create the same effect of depth that the purely phoniness of Catwoman does. But one thing I really like about it, the moonscape, from the moment they land on the moon to the moment they go into the cave, there's about 7 or 8 minutes where they're walking around on the surface. And even though the film moves in and out of synchronization, meaning that times the two images seem split apart, these scenes convey the sense of wonder to me that science fiction is all about. They seem so much like an actual 50s moon landing would have seemed. But I give it high marks for trying to look good. Incidentally, during the times when the two films, the red and the green, are perfectly synchronized, it's one of the better looking 3D movies that I've seen. Certainly one of the better Aniquid films that I've seen, because the others in my collection almost never seem to be well synchronized. There may have been a different process involved, though now they're both synchronized. Of the movies. handicapped women. It has some interesting features. There's one scene inside the movie where, whether it's deliberate or not, it actually gives the impression that the landscape curves upward at the horizon, which is what would actually be going on, you know, and which is the way it's treated in most underground world stories, like the Hollow Earth, for instance. But I don't know whether that was deliberate or whether it was just part of their crappy backdrop system that happened to fortuitously work out well. I can't identify Monument Valley in backdrops. A lot of it is simply model work. When the ship is flying in space, it usually looks pretty stupid because there are no stars in the background. There's one scene as it's landing on the moon, flying over the lunar surface, where the little model is juxtaposed with actual moonscape imagery, and that scene looks very good. When Heinlein wrote about 3D television, he probably envisioned something that looked more like IMAX, but without glasses, something that was almost purely holographic. In Stranger in a Strange Land, they talk about stereo tanks. Evidently small ones in the home, gigantic ones in theaters, that probably looked more like the IMAX system. But the level of science fiction movies at the time Heinlein was writing had not gotten much further than Catwoman. Because I've seen parts of Destination, and it doesn't look that different. It's a little more sophisticated. Heinlein himself worked on that. Ironically, some of the more sophisticated sounding stuff in Catwoman looks as if it was ripped off from Heinlein's earlier story, The Man Who Sold the Moon. There's a scene as they're leaving the spaceship where one of them has a sign that says Los Angeles, city limits, and another one is talking about the first letters mailed from the moon. This is the profiteering engineer, sort of a 50s stereotype, down-to-earth, jokey, and greedy. And he's even got his own postage. Like, he's even got his own cancellation stamp to cancel these letters, which he's hoping to make a profit from. Both of those concepts were part of the fundraising efforts of Heinlein's Man Who Sold the Moon. So I can't help associating this movie with Heinlein. It's about his 50s as his, you know, thinking mentality always seemed in most of his stories. At some point last year, I began watching Catwoman every Monday late at night, either late Sunday night or late Monday night, early Monday morning or late Monday night, as part of a kind of a moon ceremony, which means that I will probably be watching it when I finish this tape. Win or lose with this tape, I'm really hoping the tape will finish up and I'll be able to, like, keep it, dub it, and listen to it. It's the last effort I'm going to make to tape anything. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So, to sum up, I have my own version of 3D TV, ironically, I can take various combinations of these glasses and make almost any television look more three-dimensional than it is by wearing the glasses. Particularly the Pulpric glasses work best with most things. The ChromaDepth glasses work well with some things. And one version or other of Anaglyph glasses work well with other things if I feel like doing that. Though I tend to do it only with the authorized 3D stuff, just, you know, out of respect for it and because it is sort of fatiguing to the eyes. I've also noticed that computer animation of any kind, using either the ChromaDepth or particularly the Pulpric glasses, tends to look extremely 3D, even more so than some of these official 3D movies and so forth. I should mention that my collection now includes certain audio tapes of stories, which I've already mentioned, such as Ubig, the man who sold the world. Ubig, Stranger in a Strange Land, We Also Walk Dogs. Ubig is by Philip K. Dick. The other two are by Robert A. Heinlein. And I have two stories by Kim Newman, one of which is called Where the Bodies Are Buried. Three, black and white and red all over. The other is called Where the Bodies Are Buried 2020, and is a sequel to the first one, both of which are apparently sequels to earlier stories. But Where the Bodies Are Buried 3 centers around a 3D video, which was at one point rented in a store, the most popular rental they had, until the Kiss video came along. That sounded like a pure fantasy. Though the video that they were talking about reminds me more of like imagery in The Mask. The second story is about a kind of virtual reality 19 years from right now, called Mimesis. What's interesting about both of these is I read them for the first time on the day that I had just acquired the first of my little VR systems. So that was kind of neat, you know, sort of like appropriate. There's a very playful element to this, in case one can't tell that by listening to this tape. I like to sit around and pretend I'm in the kind of future here in 2001 where I can have 3D light sculptures sitting around, where I can watch 3D television, where I can put on my own little virtual reality, get gear, and zap aliens and stuff. And to a certain extent, it's all true. So I will continue painting 3D paintings because it fascinates me. And at this point, until something better comes along, until some new form of 3D presents itself or some new item in the systems that I've already got, that's the best shot I have at expanding my collection, is simply to create more 3D artwork of my own. Again, I'm hoping someday to be able to see the Magic Eye pictures. And I also have a audio tape that I recently made, which mentions those in a story called, a Lovecraftian type story called The Perseids by an author named Wilson, I believe. Plus I have several volumes now of notes that I've written. I have books that talk about 3D in various aspects. I've got a comic book history of 3D up until the 80s, which was illustrated by none other than Jack Kirby, and which contains on its back cover the first color 3D picture I ever saw meant to be seen in connection with anaglyph glasses. Of course, the lenticular 3D pictures have always been in color. But here again, each system has its strengths and its weaknesses. The lenticular pictures are very difficult to look at because they shift around, even when they aren't meant to morph into something or another. The Pulprick system has various limitations, one of which is that it seems to be only good for videos. I should mention that I also have a book given me by my friend David Green, which utilizes one of the earliest systems of 3D imaging that there is, which is a kind of stereo viewer, similar to the kind they had back in the 1800s, 1850, for instance. And this book is a book of underwater photography, of pictures of fish and other underwater creatures. It has a built-in viewer. You look at it and the two images do combine into a third three-dimensional one for me. In addition to that, I have a book of rocks, geology, pictures of rocks and landscapes and things that I bought late last year at a local bookstore down in downtown Mansfield. And this contains a system of 3D that I had seen before, but had never been able to get an example of, in which two opposite photographs with a mirror between them, one of them becomes three-dimensional when you look at it past the mirror. So these are the main items that I have so far. Of the stuff that I've got, the thing that has seen the most use has been cat women. And at this point right now, it would behoove me to go through my entire collection of comic books just in order to study the kind of perspective drawing that I mentioned earlier. The Kirby work alone would be good for that, because his work was always exaggerated in that sense, even when it wasn't in 3D. But so far, I've found it difficult to take the time to spend just looking through my collection lately. I've had too many other things to do. The latest distraction was these tapes, but as I said, whether this tape gets finished intact or not, it's going to be the last audio tape reading that I do on this machine, at least for a while, because I just don't have the time to waste, and I don't have the patience for that kind of frustration. As I speak, I'm watching the take-up reel move around. At the moment it stops, I'll know the tape is being eaten, and that will be the end of it. If I can stop it in time, turn it off, I might be able to salvage what's left of the tape. I don't know. But if the machine stops of its its own accord, then I'll have won this round, and I'll be quitting while I'm ahead. Like I said, I just bought a load of blank audio tapes, and this was the latest distraction. I had like tapes planned that would have kept me busy for several days. As it stands, this is the last one. After this, I'm probably gonna watch Catwoman and maybe some of the other videos and just relax. If this tape plays out, then I'll be dubbing it tomorrow so I can listen to it, because it'll be the only copy of it that I've got. I won't want it to be eaten, or at least I'd rather take that risk while I'm making a dupe of it. But I would expect to be listening to this one quite a bit, because what it seemed like when I was listening to Ubik last year, and then later to Stranger in a Strange Land, is that if I'm painting and listening to these tapes, it seems almost as good to me as sitting around watching my 3D television or reading my 3D comics or whatever. Obviously, I can't be doing both at once. And since I want the paintings to get done, it would behoove me to be able to experience that in an auditory fashion while I paint, so as to have to spend less time actually doing it. You know, though I'll probably be doing a lot of it anyway. The Kiss video I tend to study because it pertains to my own work. I've also been lately studying the Chroma Depth comic books. Of all the comics that I do look at, those are the most important, because those are the ones that originally taught me to paint 3D pictures. And when I'm not working on the triptych these days, that tends to be what I'm doing, unless I'm doing some special job of another sort. I just finished the latest repress comic, for instance, and sent it away. So this is Goblin Hood here in Mansfield, pretty much getting ready to sign off on Biotti's 3D collection so that we can get back to work on our paintings. I've enjoyed making these tapes. This one, perhaps, has been the least interesting because I've used a monotone throughout. I've enjoyed some of the theatrical tapes, so to speak, where I'm dramatizing the story with different voices. But again, it's the subject matter here that matters. I'd rather listen to myself talk about Catwoman of the Moon when I'm painting. If that'll keep me painting, than to spend a lot of time every day watching that hour-long movie. The Kiss video is only 5 minutes long, and it has some extremely spectacular space footage as well. Also, some of the only really animated 3D stuff that I've got on video. But they all have certain attractions. And I could spend a lot more time than I do watching this stuff. It's just that won't get my work done. So, if this tape plays out and can be duplicated and works like that, then I don't care if I listen to it over and over again. I've tended attempted to do that with some of the stories on tape and so forth that I've made. This one will be necessary to dub because it's the only copy existing, as I've already pointed out. And it was done off the top of my head. I'm actually surprised I was able to keep it going this long. I don't have any, you know, the closest I've come to actual reference material or a script to read from was when I read that entry from the Encyclopedia of Science Fiction Movies about Catwoman of the Moon. But soon I'll be watching that. And once again, taking my own little 50s trip to the moon.